You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza, and I'm here with Kristen.
And I'm Kristen.
Oops, sorry.
Sorry, that's what I was trying to say.
Oh, okay. You want me just to keep going, Evan, and you can cut that? Okay. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kristen.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today we're here with the therapist and author of the Self-Compassion Workbook, Joy Johnson. Self-compassion has been something I have been personally working on for quite some time. What made you want to write a self-compassion workbook?
Yeah, so first I just want to say thank you for having me. I love the idea of your show, and I think caregivers do such important, sacred work. And it can be really easy for them to feel really isolated and unseen. So it's so cool that you have a whole show dedicated to empowering and supporting them. Self-compassion is important to me both personally and professionally. I always kind of say I'm a recovering perfectionist and people pleaser. And so self-compassion is an ongoing practice for me. And I was definitely a skeptic when I first heard about it and learned about it. And so it's really important for me as a therapist to meet people where they are with that and really help them kind of see and feel the benefits of self-compassion with like practical tools and things that make sense and meet them right where they are. And so the workbook was a way to kind of take the work that I was doing both for myself and with my clients and to make it more accessible for more folks and have some clear, concrete ways to try to start implementing the practice.
Joy, that's really helpful to understand. And I really appreciate you using the word sacred. Thanks. Yeah. As a caregiver myself, I'm like, oh, that makes me feel special. So it's a very kind word. You mentioned you're a therapist. How about that experience? What made you decide to become one? And what's your journey been like to get there?
Yeah, it's funny because in some ways I feel like I just kind of fell into it or I never expected to go to the therapy route. But, as I reflected on it, I had a lot of chronic health issues and medical trauma. As a child, I needed a lot of caregiving growing up. And I think I really just want to be able to offer that same support to folks or the support that I didn't get in those really difficult, scary moments. So, I remember someone asking me when I graduated if I was going to be a therapist, and I was like, no way. but I got my first job was in mental health, and I just really enjoyed it. And I think I really love working one-on-one with folks. And again, like it's such a sacred space to have people come in and share their deepest feelings and, moments with me and to allow me to support them through that.
Sure. Well, it sounds like you've got a very natural tendency towards it and some personal experience that probably helps. I see on your website, you're certified in the program called The Daring Way. The Daring Way is an empirically based training and certification program for helping professionals based on the research of Dr. Brené Brown, who's like one of my heroes, lover, right? Mm-hmm. The work focuses on courage building, shame resilience, and uncovering the power of vulnerability. Of course, we all love Brené Brown, but can you tell us more about that approach to therapy?
Yeah. It's definitely hard not to love Brené. and I think that the curriculum, the model that I've been trained in, I think her work, the biggest strength is that she's able to take these really abstract, deep emotional experiences that we actually have all experienced, and she's able to put them into words to help us connect through that. So I think for a lot of folks, they'll hear, and even me, I would look at these concepts or go through the exercises, and I'd be like, I've totally felt that, but I never knew how to describe it before. And so through her research and really giving clear definitions to what shame and vulnerability are, what they look like, how it shows up in our life, I think it's so helpful in helping people connect through that.
So it's a framework that helps you become a better therapist, or it's a framework that anybody can take and use to just
anyone can take and use. It's a way to it's a way to help build shame resiliency.
Okay.
So her work shows that shame, which I kind of use interchangeably when I talk about self-compassion with a harsh inner critic, that tends to not lead us it's the deep belief that we are unworthy of love and belonging. And you know, when you hear that definition, it feels pretty clear that that's going to make it hard to lead to positive change, to show up in the way that we want. But it's a really powerful emotion. And so it's, you know, starting to learn techniques and exercises to apply what she's found in her research, which is like how to build resiliency to this very human emotion that we've all experienced. And that can be really powerful.
Right. Thank you.
And you explained that well. I know when it comes to self-compassion, a lot of people, you know, kind of associate it with a weak, I almost want to say weakness. I'm not sure if that's the right word to use, but it's not always seen, I think, in a positive light like it should be, and it doesn't. I think people have a hard time relating self-compassion, you know, building your own self-compassion with courage building, shame resilience, and vulnerability. Like how does one get you to the other, if that makes sense? I mean, can you speak to that a little bit about the impact self-compassion has on building, you know, the courage building and the shame resilience and also the vulnerability part?
Yeah, definitely. I think that weakness is a word a lot of folks use, and they use that too for vulnerability can feel like weakness for a lot of folks. And that's kind of what we, when we look at the shame research, I think vulnerability and self-compassion are both kind of ways to start to build resiliency. And shame, actually, it really leads us to isolate. So this idea that I did something bad, so I am bad, you know, most of us, when we start to feel that, we don't want to tell anyone about that. We don't want to like face that too much. Like it feels so horrible. A lot of times we kind of feel, you know, I always get the image of like just wanting to go in a dark corner and have no one see me and not talk to anyone. And that's not actually how I want to live my life, but that's kind of the feeling that comes with shame. And if I really let myself kind of spiral into it, and self-compassion and some of those exercises and starting to build this ability to notice maybe the shame start to come up, but then to be able to see ourselves as a whole person, that yes, I'm flawed and I make mistakes, but I'm also just a human being, right? And I'm doing my best. And I probably, you know, support and compassion we've just found are so much more helpful for humans than shame or than beating ourselves up. I used to use the word deserve, like, you know, maybe you deserve compassion, but that can even be hard for folks. Sometimes we don't always feel like we deserve it. Mm. And so what I go to with that is just the research and the knowing that it's so much more helpful and it feels so much more motivating and helpful to you if you're not stuck in that dark corner. But if you can say like, wow, yeah, this is really hard, and what support would be helpful to get me to whatever the next step feels right, given that I made this mistake or that I'm feeling this way.
Yes, thank you for explaining that. And I think there's, you know, a lot of shame that can be felt in being a caregiver, right? Because there's always more that, you know, you should be doing, that the shoulds really come out, mm-hmm. and should all over you. So yeah, it's great to be able to go back to that self-compassion and give yourself a hug and, you know, say that you're doing the best that you can do. I mean, that's a message I think we try to reiterate over and over again on the show, because we're all just doing the best that we can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to take that to maybe a more practical level for our listeners. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love everything you're saying, but it's very esoteric. And yes. So I'm wondering, like, what's something very specific or, you know, on the ground that you can say to family caregivers about what makes giving yourself self-compassion so difficult, and how can you overcome that?
Yeah, well, I think like Liza said, family caregivers, your job is never done. It's 24/7. There's never, you don't get to 5 p.m. and get to shut it off.
Right.
And so one thing I would think about with this is really starting to see yourself too in this bigger system that is not built for caregivers very well, and not built well for the folks that you're caring for and advocating for. And so this realization that like all the weight of like the responsibilities every day, like I'm being expected to carry so much, that's pretty unrealistic for like what a human can really carry each day. And so that's kind of draws on common humanity, which is a part of self-compassion, this belief that, you know, we're all human, we're all struggling. This is a part of the human experience. So if I'm struggling, or if I made a mistake, if I felt like I dropped the ball with one of my responsibilities, man, like, we're all humans in these broken systems that are, you know, really making it hard for us to feel like we can be successful or do everything that we need to do.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. It's still a bigger picture concept, but.
Sure. Yeah. Putting it in the context of the institutions and the systems. Yeah. Thank you.
And that kind of leads me to Kristen Neff, who I'm sure that you've read or know her work. She's one of the leading researchers on self-compassion. And she had said, through self-compassion, we become an inner ally instead of an inner enemy. And that quote was really a game changer for myself. You know, I felt that negative self-talk was just really wearing me down at points in my life. And can you explain, I know we only have a few minutes left, but can you explain some of the benefits of being self-compassionate to yourself?
Yeah. So actually, there's a lot of research that shows that leads to positive change and a more meaningful life, higher levels of mental and emotional well-being. So if we can see ourselves as a whole person and meet the worst parts of ourselves with compassion, then we can actually say, you know, like, oh, what I did that was a mistake or hurt someone, that was out of alignment with who I am. And that can lead us to then actually face accountability, face the issue, make it right with that person. It also, you know, like we said, like, caregiving is so hard, for being kind of beat down by so many things in the world, especially the past few years, that, like, if we could take the weight of beating our own selves up out of the equation, then that opens up, you know, so much more space for us to say, okay, what would actually be helpful for me in this moment, or to do these things that I really care about?
Yeah. So you're benefiting not only yourself, but I realize the more that I practice self-compassion, it allows me to be compassionate towards others as well, and not as judgmental and short and angry and all of those fun things that we sometimes get when we're stressed and overwhelmed. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we will be back after this short break.